The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
But first, Professor Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College Dublin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, this is a special week and very, very special in the current pandemic.
Well, it's Global Immunisation Week, Pat, actually. It was last week and this week. So every year they've got Global Immunisation Week. And it passes with nobody noticing, right? But nobody's ever heard of it, really, you know. And they're emphasising certain things, of course, for obvious reasons. We've got the biggest vaccination campaign in history happening in the world. Previous years, they'd focus on measles and whooping cough, you know, polio and stuff like that. But obviously this year is very different with the pandemic.
Okay, and I hope that global immunisation hasn't lost the attentions of a champion, given that Bill and Melinda Gates are having their own issues at the moment. And I hope they don't take their eye off the immunisation ball for a period, because they were hugely important in the elimination of measles in particular places. In terms of immunisation then against COVID, how well are we doing? Because here we're talking about 30% of our population being done. In the UK, it's more. In Israel, it's more again. But globally, how are we doing?
Yeah, not great. I mean, that was a big focus of it, really, in a sense, Pat. They said, look, we've given 1 billion doses out, which is a tremendous number at one level. Now, that's either 2 doses or 1 dose, you know. But that means 90% of the world is unvaccinated. And as we know, there were 2 million cases in India last week, 20,000 deaths. In Brazil, there were 400,000 cases, 17,000 deaths. So clearly the mission is going to move on now to getting the vaccine from high-income countries into the developing world. And one suggestion, Pat, that's very striking is we shouldn't be given the vaccine to under 30s until we vaccinated all the vulnerable in developing countries, because obviously the under 30s are at low risk, you know, they're unlikely to get severe disease. And if we've done all the vulnerable people, say in Ireland, is it justified then to say, look, give away vaccine? And in fact, Sweden, as you may have seen, are giving 1 million doses of AstraZeneca away to the developing countries. So there's a move now towards giving up the surplus, I guess, which is very important, because it's ethically sound, of course, because there's vulnerable people in these countries who need vaccinating and healthcare workers. But the second reason is to stop variants. It's a kind of a self-interest part as well, because obviously the more widespread the vaccination in the world, the less likely it is that variants will emerge. So we're going to see this debate now more and more in the coming weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you look at the median age of infection now in this jurisdiction, I think it's down to 23 or something. You know, it's very, very low, which means half them are below that age and half them are above that age.
Yeah.
But it suggests that the young people are getting infected. But still, we had no deaths yesterday, and the numbers in ICU are going down all the time. So the people who are getting it are not necessarily being hospitalised. However, anecdotally, we're hearing more cases of long COVID. So that's a worry.
We are. That's the problem, Pat. And that'll be the debate. I mean, should we protect the younger people against long COVID, for example, because that is a reality, you know, versus stopping people dying in developing countries? It's a tough one, isn't it, in many ways? The second thing they said in this global immunization report, Pat, was the healthcare systems are overwhelmed now in countries like India. Obviously, we've seen on the news, haven't we? And what that means is other vaccines aren't getting used. So last year, there was the highest rate of measles in the world in 20 years, over 200,000 children died of measles, because obviously there's pressure on the healthcare system to roll out the measles vaccine in these countries as well. So it goes beyond COVID in many ways, you see. So again, the mission has to be to try and get the vaccine into as many arms globally as possible.
Now, there's a very interesting thing. I don't know whether you came across it. I mentioned Bill Gates a moment ago, but he was asked in an interview about opening up the patents to third world countries or whatever, so they could make their own vaccines. And he said no. Now, you know, on the face of it, you might think, well, he doesn't want pressure on Microsoft to have to give up their patents to countries that might do well with getting better business systems and so on. But it turns out that I think his view is, and maybe you share it, that you've got to get a specialised factory doing this. You can't just hand out the formula and then expect quality vaccines, safe vaccines to emerge from any old shed.
Yeah, that's true. They're very complex things to make, and you got to make sure all the, you know, requirements are in place to make sure the vaccine you make is efficacious and safe, you know. So obviously he's concerned about that. The other argument is, Pat, send in the experts into those countries to build the factories. That's another possibility here, you see. And there's suggestions that should happen anyway, you know. And certainly, whatever way you do it, you've got to get the vaccine rate up in those countries as quickly as we can, you see. Now, I noticed, Pat, as well, Gavi and COVAX, they're the organizations, of course, that try to get the vaccine into low-income countries. They just bought 500 million doses from Moderna, which is a great sign, you know, and that'll be delivered in Q4. So in other words, there's a big attempt now to get the big sort of production lines in other countries up and running anyway, as quickly as we can. But the truth is, the other view would be we have to build the factories locally. So whether they relax the patents or send people in to help, that's got to be a key mission.
Now, the question of how much protection you get from, say, a single dose of the Pfizer vaccine and how that might impact on your resistance to variants, because turns out that a number of Americans are getting one jab and saying, thanks very much, that'll do me.
Yeah. The second big issue that's come up, Pat, in the last week is people not coming back for their second shot in America. So 5 million haven't gone back now in a period, you know, and it's growing. The number's not coming back on time, you know. They must say, I've had one shot, that'll do me, you see. So now they're saying, no, you must come back for your second shot, because as we said last week, your second shot reinforces the first shot, first of all, which is a good thing, makes it even stronger. And very importantly, may well protect you against variants, because these variants, of course, the immune system is slightly less effective against them, you know. So therefore, if you have a second shot, it'll give you an even stronger immune response to fight those variants. The campaign in the US now, interestingly, about a shift towards get people in for their second shot. And the same should apply here, but people should go back for their second shot. It's really important, because we don't want you getting infected with a variant and then ending up getting really sick, you see. So again, it's interesting how they're not coming back, isn't it? Is it partly laziness? It could be just, oh, I can't be bothered, you know. And there's also hesitancy anyway in the US, you see. So maybe that hesitancy is coming through in that way as well.
Now, the other question about partial vaccination and variants, which you've mentioned, and whether or not you kind of protect so many people totally by making sure they have the second jab, or whether you space the jabs so you get maximum vaccination in a whole population, and then let's think about the second jabs later. But is there a risk of variants popping up with partial vaccination?
There is. If you leave it too long, you see, the immune system then goes off the boil, if you like. And then maybe there's a weaker immune system, and that might allow variants to emerge in the person who's only partially immunized. It's almost like the virus is sampling us, you know, and sees a weakness in the immune system, and then the variants begin to grow in that person. That's a theoretical concern. A big paper in Science, the big, very important magazine this morning, actually says there is a risk of that. So what that means is you have to get a second shot for that reason as well. It will protect you against the variant. Of course, if you've only a weak response to the first shot, there's a risk of a variant emerging. Now, the good news is, Pat, the first shots are very strong, you see. So again, it's a theoretical risk at the moment. But we'd be wise to take the two shots for a number of reasons then, you know, to protect us against variants, first of all, but secondly, to make sure that the immune system isn't weak, which might allow variants to emerge, you see. So again, big effort now to say, get the second shot. Now, you can space it out a bit. It can be 3 months. It doesn't really matter if it's 2 or 3 months. It doesn't have to be the 3 weeks, you see. But as long as you get the second shot within what's called a moderate interval, is the term they're using between the two shots, you should be okay.
Now, you talk about the variants and when they arise, whether or not they can get around the vaccine. What about existing vaccines, how well they have coped with all the mutations that simply by weight of numbers happen in viruses? I mean, how does measles cope? How does the flu cope with vaccination?
That gives more hope, Pat. It hasn't happened with measles. So there's no evidence of measles escaping vaccines in history, you see. Now, it's a different virus, so you can't be 100% sure. Hepatitis B was interesting. In the 80s, that did get around a weak vaccine, you see, and a variant did emerge with hepatitis B in a weakly vaccinated person, but didn't pose a public health risk. It wasn't that much of a problem, that variant, you know. So there are some pieces of evidence to suggest that a weak immune response might drive a variant to grow in your body, you know. But again, the jury's a bit out in this. But to be safe, they're saying, look, get the second shot in just to be on the safe side to make sure we don't allow more variants to come out.
Now, our listeners on News Talk set out to test you, Luke. So here are the questions coming in. Question for Luke. Were there many variants of the Spanish flu? That's from John.
Well, that's a good question, John. Yeah, I don't know. I certainly, there were variants emerged, you know. I'm not sure what the total number were over time, but we know with the Spanish flu, a variant emerged that was weaker, which was a good thing. And we were kind of hoping that would happen with COVID-19, by the way, that maybe a weaker one would emerge. But, of course, back in those days, the trouble is, Pat, we didn't have genomics back in those days. So I guess the answer is we don't really know how many variants eventually came about because of the Spanish flu, you see, because we couldn't measure them. Viruses weren't even discovered then. Isn't that amazing, Pat? So in other words, what was causing the 1918 pandemic was unknown. It was thought to be some infectious agent, but viruses hadn't even been seen. So sadly, it's too long ago to get an accurate answer to that one.
Someone else says, all restrictions have been lifted in Florida. It's a wonderful success story that you're ignoring.
That sounds great if it's true. But yeah, let's hope it's true. Let's put it that way. I mean, all restrictions are lifted in Israel now, almost, you see, because of widespread vaccination. So we're all heading in that direction, let's face it. There's kind of a feeling of let's just keep our fingers crossed, in a sense, as we see places reopen. I hope Florida has a high level of vaccination, because otherwise there's a risk of it coming back, obviously, in that place.
Yeah. And they had a full house at the snooker last night, everyone wearing masks, and everyone had an antigen test before they were admitted. But they had a full house. So it's part of an experiment, by the way. It's not the norm yet, but that's what they're doing in the UK, such as the level of vaccination.
That was great to see, Pat, wasn't it? It looked like a normal snooker. I watched some of myself. Yeah, I mean, that was great, wasn't it? To see. Let's keep our fingers crossed that there won't be an outbreak there, because that's a real test case. A lot of people in that room, they wore masks, obviously, as a precaution. And then let's just see. That's part of a program of research, in a way, Pat. They're trying several different events now, the FA Cup included, by the way. And they're monitoring everything very, very closely. And they're optimistic. They wouldn't be doing it, Pat, otherwise, because they already got confidence. They wouldn't want to put people at risk, you see. So they're pretty confident. And that should be a safe thing to do. And if it is watched, all those events now will begin to come back in a safe way, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that you take your mask off and you just jolly as you did before. Still, the precautionary principle will apply. Now, this is an interesting one from Michael in Arklow. He says, can you ask the great man this? I'm a healthy 52-year-old man. I never need to visit my doctor. My immune system is great. What will the vaccine do to my immune system? I have no fear of COVID or a vaccine, but I don't need the vaccine, says Michael. What do you think of that?
Well, the recommendation is, Michael, take the vaccine. It must be said, just in case, because let's say you get a massive dose of virus. If you're unlucky enough there, your immune system could be overwhelmed by it. You see, that's the risk. Now, he sounds very robust, by the way, so that sounds really good. But the public health advice is to have widespread vaccination, because obviously that's the one way to get rid of the virus overall. You know, but remember, our immune systems are wonderful things. They really do a great job. And the other thing, Pat, to say would be there's no doubt now that a strong immune reaction to the first to an infection followed by one shot is a very robust thing to do. And remember, as you said, you get a big response that would fight any variant, you see. So in other words, again, that's evidence that you should really get vaccinated. It's just again a safety thing, really, to give yourself full protection, you know.
Yeah. So the person who has had COVID and gets one shot has a super duper protection.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point, because the natural infection brings out the immune system in droves, you see. And then when you give the first shot, as it were, you know, that really soups up that massive response, you know. They got a sevenfold increase, actually, with a single shot in someone who had been infected before, you know. So again, that's a really good sign. And again, the two shots should mimic that, remember, because obviously in someone who isn't infected then, the first shot wakes up the immune system and the second shot really gives it a kick, you see. So hence the two shots are needed if you haven't been infected. Mm.
Luke mentioned last week that 4 weeks after the first dose of AstraZeneca, you achieve a dividend. And our listener wants to know, what does that dividend mean?
Yeah, well, again, it's on the HSE, you'll see, the list of things people can do now more and more. You know, the main thing it means is you can meet other people who are vaccinated with no restrictions. That's the first thing. But secondly, you can meet other people who aren't vulnerable with no restrictions. Now, what that explicitly means is if you've had AstraZeneca 4 weeks later, when your immune system is now firing away, you know, you can meet your grandchildren. Now, they wouldn't have been vaccinated for obvious reasons, but because they were not in a vulnerable group, it's now safe to meet people who aren't vulnerable if you've been vaccinated.
Yeah.
So that's the immediate bonus, I guess, yeah. We're going to see. And we'll see more and more. They're going to take it stepwise and just make sure everything's okay, you know.
Yeah.
But we will see more and more dividends as time goes by.
Yeah. I noticed Tony Holan in his open letter was saying to the people who are vaccinated, have confidence in your vaccine. You know, do the things that you're allowed to do. Don't be fearful. These vaccines are great. So if you're vaccinated, you can meet with other vaccinated people in great safety. And it's probably, you know, encouraging for those who have been vaccinated to get out there in the fresh air, by the way, and enjoy themselves, but also a warning to others. If you're not vaccinated, you're still in danger. This one from John. My partner got Pfizer and will get the second towards the end of May, so she'll be set to go early in June. I got AstraZeneca yesterday, and the next dose is 4 months away. So he is concerned. Do I have to stay undercover while she lets loose? Good question.
As long as 4 weeks go by, you know, that's the instruction there. So once 4 weeks have elapsed after the first shot, you can get the dividend, you know, and behave like the other person, say whatever it is, you know, and then get the second shot. And as we say, it's weeks and weeks later. That gap is fine. The second shot that goes in and reinforces that first shot, you see. But after 4 weeks after the first shot, it's okay, you know, to meet the other person who's been vaccinated as well.
Now, my parents are in their 80s. Both have had the two vaccines, but they've had absolutely no reaction to either one. Are they fully covered? They're in a little bubble in Donegal, and practically everyone around them has had COVID, but they're not reaping any benefits yet. I suppose people are wondering, because you hear of people having a fairly strong reaction to various vaccines. I heard of people having a strong reaction to the second Pfizer jab, having no reaction to the first. I've heard people having reactions to the first AstraZeneca, you know, feeling a bit fluey and a bit sore for a day or two. So, you know, what do you say to those people who've had no reaction at all?
It's just very variable. This is like any biological thing. You see variation in a population. You know, I wouldn't worry about it at all, actually, to be honest. I mean, if you have a strong response, you might say to yourself, oh, my immune system's working and that's good, you know. But these vaccines are so powerful that they can work and you've no apparent symptoms at all, you see. So those people can assume they're vaccinated, let's put it that way, you know. Just because you don't get a response to it doesn't mean you're not vaccinated. So I wouldn't worry about that too much.
All right. Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. Thank you very much for joining us.